I'm Aaron Henkin, sitting in today for Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. In the second hour of our program today, we'll talk with Deborah Rothman. She's known around town as the Sex Lady. She's been a sex educator for local teens for the past 40 years. How do you talk to your kids about sex? In this day and age, messages about sex are everywhere, and the places to turn for answers are often not where you want them to go. We'll also hear from a peer educator for Planned Parenthood about how teens can talk with each other and establish a dialogue on safe and healthy sex. We'll all sit down together for The Talk, That Talk, in the second hour of Midday, right after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday. Aaron Henkin here, sitting in for Dan Rodericks. Messages about sex are everywhere. TV, movies, music, commercials, magazines, all over the internet. It is pretty much impossible for a kid to grow up today without being exposed to some very highly sexualized messages along the way. That, of course, coupled with the awkwardness of talking about sex, makes it plenty difficult for teens and parents to talk about the importance of safe sex and healthy relationships. As children grow into young adults, how do we teach them to navigate the world that's, a world that is giving you all sorts of confusing messages about sex and your bodies and intimacy and relationships? Well, joining us on the show now is Deborah Rothman. She is a nationally certified sexuality and family life educator. This week marks the end of her 40th year teaching human sexuality education to the students at Park School of Baltimore. Today, you say, is your 40th anniversary?
I just finished teaching my last class for the year.
Congratulations. I imagine the physics of the whole thing probably haven't changed much, but the culture
That's right.
She has consulted for more than 300 public schools and private schools across the country and written dozens of articles and op-eds about teen sexuality. She is the author of 3 books. The most recent is Talk to Me First, Everything You Need to Know to Become Your Kid's Go-To Person About Sex. It's published by DeCapo Press. She was also recently acknowledged, by the way, by Time Magazine as one of the top 16 parenting experts for 21st century families. And her website, sexandsensibility.net. Deborah Rothman, welcome to Midday.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
Before we get into anything else, I have to ask, do you remember when your parents sat you down for the talk? How'd that go for you?
Actually, my parents never sat me down. They kept this whole topic in like a little leaden box in the basement, you know, on the top shelf with the door closed. And every once in a while, they might give me or my brother a little nugget or something, probably a sliver of information. And after that, I was told I wasn't old enough to know anything else. Which had a terrible effect on me because I thought, well, what's wrong with me? Why did I want to know that if I'm not old enough to know? So I tried not to think about it pretty much.
How did you become this acclaimed expert? I mean, what led you down this path?
Well, it certainly wasn't because my parents told me they wanted me to be a sexuality educator.
Right, obviously.
Most of the people I would say who got into the field in my age group got in by accident. I fell into a job. With no training, no experience, I learned within the first 3 hours that this was what I wanted to do with my life. I was hired as an educator at Planned Parenthood of Maryland, and you have some folks from Planned Parenthood here today. And it was a very exciting time because it was really in the infancy of the field that we call human sexuality education.
You mentioned Planned Parenthood. We do have a couple of other guests that are going to be joining us in the next segment of our program. But Deborah, let me start with you by having you explain that, as I understand it, this whole notion of, you know, the talk being a one-time affair, so to speak, where that you sort of, your kid gets to an age where you're like, oh boy, they're probably going to be, you know, getting into this whole thing,
and
it's time for me to sit down. Mm-hmm. first of all, one talk is not the way to think about it. And waiting until you're feeling nervous about having the talk is you've waited too long.
And then I think we sort of see it as a series of talks. You know, so there's the talk, and then there's the puberty talk, and then there's maybe the sexually transmitted infection talk. And we are really held back as a society in supporting our children's growth and development by healthy growth and development around everything, including sexuality, by seeing it that way. This is not information that we have to hold on to and dole out little by little as if it is in some way potentially harmful or dangerous. You know, if you read the prevention science literature about particularly about adolescence, you know, there's one word that comes up over and over and again, and that is postponement. That's what seems to be the thing to aim for, that kids who postpone becoming involved in all kinds of potentially risky behaviors do much better when they're in the situations where they have to decide that. And what we know is that children who are raised with parents who openly discuss these issues from the earliest ages possible raise children who make better decisions, because I believe it's not because the talk, it's because, not the information, it's because we continue to talk. What we're really teaching them is how to think about this information, and that means how to think about making good decisions. And I people who are that thoughtful about things tend to make more cautious, deliberate decisions.
Listeners, how about you? Are you getting ready to have that talk with the child of your own or a teenager of your own? How's it been going for you? Are you dreading this experience? Dr. Deborah Rothman, Deborah Rothman says, no need to dread this. This is something that we should celebrate. What are your thoughts? What are your questions for Deborah Rothman on this, you know, admittedly touchy subject that maybe shouldn't be such a touchy subject, but, you know, we all feel nervous about it. This hour is here. We're here to sort of, you know, to dispel, demystify, and give you an opportunity to share your experiences, your questions, your concerns. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. The number again, 410-662-8780. You can also send us an email. The email address, midday@wypr.org. Aaron Henkin here for Dan Rodericks with Deborah Rothman. And Deborah, I wonder if you might talk a little bit about the fact that, you know, these conversations don't just have to be limited to the sex talk, but that they can be longer ongoing conversations about gender and identity as well. This is our gender is, you know, interwoven with our larger identity.
Well, just think about it. The first thing that was ever said about you, Aaron, I would think is that, oh, it's a boy.
Right.
And that's a piece of identity that is really our first connection with our identity. That pronouncement changes people's lives more than anything, because we tend to think sort of in binary terms about males and females and gender roles. And it makes me really sad, because if you think about it, children are nothing but potential. And to limit children in that way by, you know, once we say, oh, it's a boy, it's a girl, and we start having all these ideas about who they are supposed to be, who they are going to be, it really inhibits their becoming who they're meant to be in lots of ways. So it's important to know that we teach our children, and by the way, the first thing anybody ever looked at you, where they ever looked at you to determine your gender, was your genitals. So again, we're giving messages to children from very early on that these must be very, very important parts of myself. I'm going to pay close attention to that. So that if we're not the ones helping them understand all of that, and by and large, I think this happens for most American kids, even today, is that they have available to them the default option that you mentioned before, you know, whether it's peers, the media, the internet, etc. That's who they turn to if they don't know that we are aware and available to them.
Let's go ahead and go to the phones. 410-662-8780, the number to call to share your thoughts, your questions with Deborah Rothman. And by the way, Deborah, you're going to want to put your headphones on here so you'll be able to hear this caller. Sherry in Baltimore, you're on Midday. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. I want to say. I think this is a great subject. So many parents just don't get that you have to educate your child so they can come to you and ask questions. We bought our son, who's a 12-year-old, a book called What's Going On Down There? And it's a great book. We'd read a chapter a night, and sometimes it would just be me. Sometimes it would be my husband and I reading. And it was very informative about everything, sexually transmitted diseases, your body, how it works. And I said, I want you to be able to ask me in case somebody tells you something at school that doesn't make sense. You're going to be like, oh, that doesn't make sense. I read about that. That's not true.
Right.
And it's something that we gave him at the end and said, here, put this on your bookshelf. And anytime you have other questions, just, you know, ask us and go into the book and read it. And I said, I want you to be able to be open with me. We have an open line of communication with your father and I, and it really worked out well.
Yeah, I want to applaud you 1,000 times for what you just said, because you demonstrated something that I say all of the time. Here's the point. The goal is for us to get there first with our children. And what I mean by that is, whatever the topic related to issues of sex, gender, or reproduction, they hear about it from us first. And what that means is that they end up with our lens over their eyes and our voice in their ears and our framework in their brain, in their mind, so that everything else that comes after that will have to be filtered through what we put there first. And that's exactly what your son did. And that's exactly what he needed.
Thank you, Sherry, for your call. 410-662-8780. The number to call to join us here on The Conversation on Midday, or midday at WYPR.org. We're here with sex ed expert Deborah Rothman. And Deborah, how would you rate, most schools' family life programs? I mean, you've done this work in schools for 40 years now. Where are we at institutionally?
We are in a very bad place, actually, and not for the reasons that most people might identify. We have this amazingly, really awful double standard when it comes to teaching about this subject. You know, we hold on to it until maybe kids get to puberty age. What we don't understand is that by then, they've been exposed to all of these other things around them. So that I would say the average school in America is 3 to 7 years late teaching basic benchmarks of information, even about reproduction. So here again, we have to get our adult anxieties and misperceptions out of the way and listen to children. And what parents have been telling me for 40 years is that if you communicate, yeah, we're open to that, children begin asking questions about their origins. See, we mistake it. We think it's about sex, but it's not about sex. They're asking, it's a who am I question, where did I come from question. And they ask a sequence of questions typically from ages 4 to 6. And we don't have to sit them down. We can respond to their questions in an open, honest way, just like every other topic that they ask us about in life.
We're going to need to take a short break here. When we come back, more with Deborah Rothman, a Baltimore-based sex ed expert and author of Talk to Me First, Everything You Know, Everything You Need to Know to Become Your Kid's Go-To Person About Sex. Plus, we're going to learn about the peer education program at Planned Parenthood and hear about the concerns of high school students in Baltimore. Your questions, your comments at 410-662-8780. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin in for Dan Rodericks. We're here with Deborah Rothman, longtime human sexuality educator in Baltimore, about how to talk to our kids about sex, a conversation that many parents and children dread and even avoid. Maybe that's why Dan is avoiding this. Maybe that's why I'm in guest hosting for Dan today. He's avoiding this talk. Deborah Rothman says, you don't have to dread this talk. You don't have to avoid this. This should be celebrated. From a teen's perspective, you should say that, initiating a conversation with an adult or a parent can be, pretty uncomfortable. Our next guests here in this segment of the program recognize that. The Planned Parenthood of Maryland holds monthly teen talks led by peer educators. At these open forum meetings, the topics range from all sorts of subjects, gender identity, contraceptive methods, building healthy relationships. Joining us today is Julie Fager. She is Vice President of Education and Training for Planned Parenthood Maryland. Also with us, one of Planned Parenthood's peer educators, also a recent graduate of the Bryn Mawr School in Baltimore City, Asma Hossein. Julie Fager, Asma Hossein, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Julie, tell us about the peer education program at Planned Parenthood. When did it start, and you know how many peer educators are out there?
Sure. So in 2000, the program was established at Planned Parenthood of Maryland, and it's been going strong ever since. It's grown in size. Bryn Mawr School has always been well represented. They've been a really excellent partner for this for us in this program. And this year we have 18 peer educators?
19.
So it's grown a little bit each year, and it's very, very strong. We were really fortunate to honor one of our former peer educators at our gala last week. And the peer education program is based on the idea that teenagers seek a lot of information from their peers. So as much as parents are really the primary sexuality educators of their children, teens are becoming adults. They're seeking information on their own. They're becoming independent. They want to find out, what are other people like me doing? What's normal? Am I normal? Is my body normal? Are these feelings that I have normal? So they ask these questions of their peers. But as Deborah said, a lot of schools may be behind in giving accurate information to young people. So the teens may not have good information to share. So that's where the peer educators come in. We give them good information and turn them loose in that ecosystem so that when young people have questions, the peer educators are there to give them accurate answers.
Peer educators, obviously a very valuable resource, but I mean, how do you reach out and get people to agree to be peer educators? I mean, you know, maybe awkward enough asking the questions, but now, you know, sort of, you know, signing up to become the one to provide the answers. How do you get folks on board for this?
Well, the person who's in charge of the program, Lindsay Romer, is an amazing advertiser of this program. She does a lot of education and outreach in Baltimore City, and she recruits all year. She offers this opportunity to people all the time, and she takes applications in the spring. Unfortunately, if there's any teens listening, we just finished accepting applications for next year, so we're done. We're recruiting now. But she spends the whole school year talking to young people. And oftentimes when we go out and we teach, there's one or two kids in the classroom who are like, this seems so fun. And they just think that the idea of talking to other teens about sex and sexuality is really, really fun. And we want those kids. We want to give them the accurate information. They're the ones who their peers are going to be going to already to ask questions. And if we can find those kids, the ones that are influential, that are already sort of opinion leaders in their school, those are the types of students that we want to be in the peer education program.
Planned Parenthood peer educator Asma Hossein, is that how it was for you? You couldn't wait to jump into this role?
Yeah, definitely. I think sexual health has always been very prominent in the Bryn Mawr community. They start sexual health education when you're actually in fifth grade. And I came across this opportunity during my sophomore year. One of our graduating seniors was promoting the program, and my supervisor, Lindsay, came to give an information session on what it is that we do and what teen talks are about and what our role as a peer educator is. And I decided it's something I was really interested in. I mean, the whole concept of teens teaching teens is, you know, it's a really beautiful thing to have someone your age to be able to go to and talk to in confidence, who knows everything that you need to know should you not feel comfortable talking to an adult yourself.
Tell me about this peer-to-peer education that you do. Do you have groups? Do you have like get-togethers or social gatherings, or is this a one-on-one kind of a thing? I mean, on the ground level, how does this work?
So we have monthly meetings at Planned Parenthood for just the peer educators. And that's when we come together as a group, talk about our teen talks, and decide what it is that we are trying to accomplish for the time being. And we hold those teen talks, and we get a bunch of kids that come in asking questions about the topic for the month. We talk about birth control, healthy relationships, the availability of contraception, and various things like that. But other than that, in teen clinics, we always have two peer educators down in the clinic on Thursdays. and teens will go and get a chance to talk to them before they go in with the doctor. And they'll get a chance to ask them the questions that they have about what'll happen at their checkup, what the doctor's going to ask for them, what they can do for them. And any really concerns that they have, they share with us, and we do our best to offer them some comfort.
Yeah, I just want to remind listeners, you're listening to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin in for Dan Rodericks, and we welcome you to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. In studio here with, first of all, with Deborah Rothman. She's the author of Talk to Me First. Also with us from Planned Parenthood, Julie Fager. She's the Vice President of Education and Training for Planned Parenthood Maryland. And the voice you were just hearing, Asma Hossein, a peer educator at Planned Parenthood. Join us, 410-662-8780, with your questions, your concerns, your thoughts, and your contributions. You can also join us online through the, what's that thing called? It's the internet, at midday@wypr.org. Midday@wypr.org. So, Julie, Asma, what are the toughest questions to answer? I'm sure you are in this, you know, you're in this business, in this world, and some things are, you know, very, very rote, very easy to deal with. But what are some of the tough ones that you really have to kind of walk a tightrope philosophically that really challenge you as a, you know, fellow human being to help people work through these things?
I think some of the most challenging questions are when a patient or a young person asks us what we think they should do. Yeah. They may not be able to talk to a parent or another trusted adult, and they are looking to us for real guidance for, you know, I don't know what to do about which birth control method. I don't know if this relationship that I'm in is healthy. I don't know what I should do. I have a pregnancy and I don't know what to do about it. And they want us to give them advice. And it's really important for us to help them identify what's important to them and what are their values and what is it that they need, and help them have the difficult conversations that they can have with their parent, with their partner. If they don't have a parent they can talk to, do they have an older brother or sister? Do they have a teacher or someone that they can talk to who can help them figure out what their, you know, sort of the decision-making process? Because they're probably going to come to us once for an appointment, but there are people in their lives they're going to have ongoing relationships with, and we want to help them be able to continue those relationships in a healthy way.
That's Julie Fager. Asma Hossein, anything you want to add to that?
I think oftentimes, in my experience when I've been working down in the clinic, a lot of teens do express that concern that they don't know how to approach their parents about topics like birth control. And they're nervous that their parents will get the wrong idea, that they're trying to become sexually active, and their parents will shut down the conversation from there. And I think it's difficult at that point to give them the tools that they need to comfortably approach their parents. And again, we do what we can to help them, and we offer our different reasonings for why teens choose to go onto birth control that they can present to their parents to then open up that conversation. But just it's a little difficult to see when teens are struggling to have that conversation with their parents in the first place.
410-662-8780. We're going to go to the phones here. I want to remind, this is a question for our Planned Parenthood representatives. So we've got two headphones, three guests. Deborah, stand by. Well, I'm going to let your colleagues here put these headphones on so we can hear this call as we go now to John in Baltimore County. John, you're on Midday. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just wondering, what services do Planned Parenthood offer for young men?
Mm-hmm. What services does Planned Parenthood offer for young men? Pregnancies don't happen without young men being involved, or men of any age, I guess. How do you bring everybody into the fold here?
That's a great question. Thanks, John. So we offer reproductive health care services for men, too. So we have a lot of men who come with their female partners and are kind of sitting around in our waiting room twiddling their thumbs. But we offer STI testing for males. We do actually offer a vasectomy for males. So men who've decided that they don't want to have any children at all or no more children, we offer that service. We can help men who might be LGBT, who have questions about, you know, different, like, different things that they can do to stay healthy in those relationships. We also offer a lot of education and outreach around condoms. I've got one in front of me because I hoped I would have the chance to talk about it. I teach young men at a drug and alcohol treatment center in Baltimore City, and the men are so eager to ask questions because they don't get much sex education growing up. So much of what's out there is focused on girls. So by the time they have the opportunity to have an all-male environment where they can get their questions answered, it's like a flood. They have so many questions. They're so excited to learn. And it's really, really fun to get to hear the things that they've sort of asked each other about as they've grown up, because most girls have a big sister or a mom, an aunt, somebody that they can talk to about sex. And many boys just kind of get like slapped on the back by their dad or their older brother. And they're just like, have fun, John, like best of luck. Good, you know, you're doing good. And that's kind of it. So by the time they are older, they may have already had lots of questions that were never answered. So we do offer reproductive health care services for men at our health centers. And we are excited to see male patients because there's lots of opportunities for them to protect themselves from the risk of an unplanned pregnancy and definitely from sexually transmitted infections.
Thank you for your call, John, in Baltimore County. 410-662-8780, the number to call to join this conversation with your thoughts, your questions. And let me turn to you now, Deborah, and ask you to maybe speak in a more general way about this notion that, sex ed, reproductive health. Well, that's a young woman's problem. That's a young woman's issue. This is, you know, that's sort of old thinking at this point, but is that a persistent kind of trend?
I think a lot of it has to do with how we stereotype males in our society, that they're invulnerable, that they can take care of themselves, that they're strong and ahead of the curve and aggressive or assertive. And I've always worried about boys more than girls, precisely because most people haven't. And boys are so tender inside. I've raised two sons, but I've taught, you know, hundreds and hundreds of boys. And they need lots of permission to say, I don't know, to say, I don't think I want to do that now. And they're under the same kinds of amount of pressure, I think, as girls are. It perhaps is in one direction, and that is, oh, you're expected to say yes, you're expected to be interested in sex all the time. Whereas girls get the same, I think, extent of pressure, but it's in two directions, because their concern socially is, well, if I go, quote unquote, too far, I'll be called one name, but if I don't go far enough, I'll be called another name. So in this system, nobody is really allowed to be in touch with what they want and who they are, and to communicate that to another person. And I think that's one of the most important pieces of work that Planned Parenthood is doing with teenagers.
Well, returning back to Planned Parenthood and our caller's question, I wonder, Julie, Asma, you can obviously sound off on this as well. The peer educating program, are the peer educating sessions, this is a co-ed opportunity, or is it like you have male peer educators for male groups, female for female groups? Asma, how's that work?
So in our program, we have both male and female peer educators. We don't divvy them up by sex. Our teen talks, we give them together. In the program currently, we have more women than we do men. However, you know, we give them together. We speak as one entity.
Okay. 410-662-8780, the number to call to join this conversation. You can also, of course, join us by email at midday@wypr.org. We have an email here from listener Naomi in Parkville. She says, do you have any advice about the best ways to teach abstinence before marriage, and also about how to talk to kids about respecting everyone's unique family and religious cultures? I don't know who wants to take that one first. Deborah, you're sitting right there in the middle. You've been at this the longest. I'll turn to you first.
You know, the word abstinence, I think the way we use it is really problematic. It's an empty concept, and it always makes me want to ask, what are you talking about? Abstinence from what, with whom, under what circumstances, and for what purpose? And if we can answer those questions, we can get a lot clearer about what it is that we, how we need to be talking with kids about decision making. So, for example, a person who thinks that young people should abstain from these behaviors until they are married, is that a developmental point that they're trying to make, or is it a religious point that they're trying to make? Because regardless of what our point of view is, we have to put it in a clear context for kids, very clear context, so that they know exactly where we're coming from a values base. And I'm perfectly comfortable talking about religion in my classroom all the time, because after all, religion has an awful lot to say, in not only in the past, but continuing today, and they need to understand all of those points of view.
Asma Hossein, let me turn to you and ask if that perspective comes up in the conversations that you have with your peer groups.
I think the idea of abstinence comes up less when I'm being approached by someone who's my age, be it a friend or a classmate. However, in the time that I've seen my supervisor, Lindsay, teach classes at various schools, the number one thing that she always tries to emphasize is that abstinence is the 100% only method to prevent teen pregnancy and to prevent the spread of STIs. And I like that emphasis on the idea of abstinence. I think that teenagers today put less of an emphasis on it. And I think that's kind of an idea that's been brushed aside because it's not with the times, so to speak. But I think it's important for teens to understand that that is really the only 100% effective method to prevent pregnancy and the spread of STIs.
We're going to need to head to a break here, but before we do, I want to say thank you to two of our guests who are going to head out here. Julie Fager, the Vice President of Education and Training for Planned Parenthood of Maryland, and Asma Hossein, who is a peer educator through Planned Parenthood, a recent graduate of the Bryn Mawr School in Baltimore. Julie, Asma, thank you both to you. Thank you, you guys, very much for being here.
Thank you.
Another quick break here. When we come back here on Midday, more on how to talk to your children and your teens about sex. What questions are you hoping they don't ask? Do you worry about giving them too much information too soon? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or an email at midday@wypr.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Aaron Henkin in for Dan Rodericks. How do you talk to your children about sex? Do you remember having that conversation with your parents? Think back to middle school or high school. What did you learn from the adults in your life? And was that information useful in the long run? 410-662-8780, the number to call to join us here on Midday with your thoughts, your stories, your anecdotes, your fears, frustrations on this subject of sex education. Joining us in studio is Deborah Rothman, sex educator from Baltimore. She's here to answer your questions. She's the author of, most recently, Talk to Me First, Everything You Need to Know to Become Your Kid's Go-To Person About Sex. Join us, 410-662-8780. And Deborah Rothman, I want to let you pick up where our last guests left off. We had a peer educator in here, and when asked about the subject of abstinence, was explaining that, that's the only 100% effective way to avoid pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. Abstinence, though, this is a loaded term and a complicated term, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what we haven't quite realized as a culture is that life is very, very different. We know that, but it's different from on a physical basis that we don't tend to pay enough attention to. You know, the emphasis used to be on should you do it or not, right? Mm-hmm. For all kinds of obvious reasons. If you think about it, our kids today have a 12 or 13-year-old period between the time developmentally when they are capable of reproducing and to use one marker of adulthood, marriage. So they need us to help them more than anything to know how to think critically about all the decisions that they're going to be facing during that period of time. And we have to shift the conversation to not doing it or not. That's not the question. And not only that, sexual intercourse is not the only way that people engage with each other. And that's the emphasis has been on that. But it's under what circumstances might it be okay for you to consider saying yes to that particular experience? And under what circumstances is it truly not in your best interest or someone else's best interest to say yes, and you really should say no? That's teaching critical thinking skills that they can apply to any and all situations that they're going to be in all of those years. You know, the premarital period used to be very, very short.
Right, now, we're evolutionarily equipped for something that we're not socially compatible with at this point.
That's the shift that we have to do. It's a shift to critical thinking and teaching kids how to do that.
410-662-8780, the number to call to join this conversation, to share your thoughts, your questions with human sexuality educator Deborah Rothman. Let's head to the phones now and hear from Lorenzo in Baltimore. Lorenzo, you're on Midday. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm echoing your basic premise about communication with kids. My twins are 29 years old, but
hopefully you've had the talk by now.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, but before they were born, I didn't have a dad in my life, and I didn't know how I was going to, you know, raise these boys. I remember the one thing I thought of was, I'm going to be honest with them. I'm going to make it so that they can talk to me about anything. Something that basically I learned from my mom, who, by the way, was a counselor for Planned Parenthood 47 years ago. So, but I never thought it would come so fast as them being 5 years old. My 5-year old leaves kindergarten. I pick him up from kindergarten one day, and he asked me where babies come from. And I'm like, "Are you got to be out of your mind? This is 5 years old, and he's in the back seat." And I started off trying to be kind of simple. Well, when a man and woman get married, they have a baby. And I remember the look on his face was like, that doesn't, you know, you're not answering anything. I had to have an hour 15 long conversation with this boy, you know, age appropriate, but I had to tell him exactly where babies come from. And it took me a long time trying to break it down to a 5-year old. But when I was all done, he said, "You know what, Dad, I thought that's how it worked," you know, and the reason, you know, he asked the question was because some kid in class was talking about where babies come from. So, you know, my point is, well, you know, if you let some other kid teach them, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to your kids. The only person who can do it and do it the right way, or the only people that can do it and do it the right way, are parents. So you have to have open communication with your kids. And I will hope on a lighter note, that's kind of scary sometimes, because you'd be surprised some of the things they talk to you about when they get a little bit older. You're like, you know, blushing, but you know what? It's better they talk to you about it than someone else. And so communication to me is the key. It is seriously the key to raising good kids. And by the way, I have 2 great kids. So
I'm sure you do.
Beautifully said, Lorenzo. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I want to say good for you and good for your son, because he had a question and he needed for you to hear the question on the level at which he was asking. And this is what we tend to do. Oh, my God, they're asking about sex. What do I do? They're only 5 years old. But they're not really asking about that. So even 4-year-olds spontaneously, and it's not even because somebody at school said something, they spontaneously ask the question, where did I come from? Because they've suddenly can understand the concept. Oh, I wasn't here always. There was a time before I was born. So where was I then? That's really all they're asking. It's about geography.
This is their first great existential crisis, really.
Well, no, the existential crisis comes at age 6, actually, to a degree. But it's, what do you hear about what 6-year-olds are thinking about? Yeah. So 5-year-olds, because they're fascinated by movement through time and space, tend to ask a year later, but how did I get out of there? They're not curious about that a year before, because they're focused on some other cognitive issue. And when they're 6... I'm so glad you said existential, because when a 6-year-old has the brain power to understand, oh my God, I didn't always exist, they are also very cause and effect oriented. So the classic 6-year-old question, again, asked quite spontaneously, and this is not about adult sex. This is about, how did I come into existence? And they really want to know the mechanics of that. We adults tend to project onto younger children, especially what we think they're asking about, and we have to stop ourselves and look at the world through the eyes of our kids.
410-662-8780. The phones are lighting up here on Midday with questions, callers who want to speak with human sexuality expert Deborah Rothman. We'll go next to Sarah in Frederick. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for your call.
I just wanted to share with you guys, I'm 20 years old, so it's not so long ago that, you know, I was in high school dealing with a lot of kids. And I just kind of wanted to comment on the peer, I guess, mediator and woman who was just speaking on here. I feel like, to me and around most of my friends, I believe the most important thing is to teach your kids about the availability of birth control. Because whether people teach abstinence or they don't, there are pressures and kids are going to have sex. And I just feel like there are ways to educate these children about the idea that they don't have to be afraid of it. Because, you know, parents are afraid to tell their kids that they can have birth control. Because, you know, a kid comes to their parent, the first thing they're like, they want to protect their child. The first thing they say is, no, you know, you can't get birth control. You're not going to have sex. You're going to wait until you fall in love. But then these kids are going to have sex anyway. And I feel that it is extremely imperative that these children know that they have the option.
Sarah in Frederick, thanks for your call. Deborah?
There is this tendency we have to say, well, if they're asking about it, they must be wanting to do. And most questions that teenagers ask have to do with their own curiosity, and why wouldn't they be curious about these things? When we adults project onto them that there's something else going on, you know, they have an agenda here, that's when they stop talking to us. So we have to be very, very careful about that and understand that most questions from children and teens of all ages are about curiosity. They're simply asking us for the truth about something. And we don't hesitate to give them the truth about other things. It's just this topic, and that's the double standard we have to get rid of.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned to Midday. Aaron Henkin in here for Dan Rodericks. Our guest this hour, Deborah Rothman, human sexuality expert, sex ed expert, 40 years in the biz. She's written a book most recently, Talk to Me First, Everything You Need to Know to Become Your Kid's Go-To Person About Sex. This is your chance to ask questions, share your thoughts, your worries, your concerns. Don't be shy. The phone number, 410-662-8780. 410-662-8780. And we return now to the phones. Caller from West Virginia, Gina. Gina, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I am calling today because I am a mother of four children, and I have a 16-year-old daughter. She's my oldest. And my husband and I are trying to teach her abstinence, but more than anything, teach her that her education is the most important thing that she needs to focus on, because with education, then there are many other doors open. We do not allow dating, but we do encourage her to be friends with the opposite sex, because we both believe that it's beneficial for you to be comfortable around them and be able to get to know yourself and how to act. Do you feel that this is an appropriate path to send a child on, to, you know, be friendly and be comfortable, but no dating, because that's grown-up stuff, and you're not quite ready for that?
Thank you. I think your basic message there is, I think, to your child, and it's really important that we be clear about why it is that we're giving the advice that we're giving, is that this is a time in your life when we want you and you want to keep all of your options open to you and to make decisions that are going to support your growth and development as you move through early adulthood. So that's what I meant before when I said abstinence from what behavior, under what circumstances, and for what reason. The more we can be clear about our reasons, the more our children will be willing to engage in thinking things through with us. And of course, we also have to recognize that they're going to make the transition from being a child whose behavior is monitored by their parents to being a more grown-up young person who's going to be making independent decisions. And if we leave them without information and they make another choice, we're really making them more vulnerable than they need to be.
Gina, thank you for your call. 410-662-8780, the number to call to speak with human sexuality expert Deborah Rothman. And next up on the phones, Tom in Baltimore. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi there. Just calling. I've been involved in a sexuality education program through my church, and I just thought I would mention that as there are resources that parents can go to if they don't really feel up to the activity of talking with their child and to get some support. And then a lot of what we do in this particular program resonates with all the stuff that we've been hearing during the show this hour.
Okay, thanks for your input there, Tom. Deborah, other institutions that are
Absolutely.
Operating, offering this kind of education?
Unfortunately, kids tend to think about religious institutions as being about hard and fast rules and being sort of negative about this whole topic of sexuality. And that's one of the reasons I talk about religion in my classrooms, because certainly there are prescriptions that have been handed down through religious institutions. And religion has an awful lot of positive things to say to people about their lives in general. And after all, if you look at the Hebrew Bible, it's all about sex, gender, and reproduction in one way or another. So we have a lot to learn from religious-based organizations and any youth-serving organizations. This is something we can all be a part of as a community.
I have a question for you, Deborah Rothman. You've been at this 40 years. How much has the world changed around you in the culture of teenagedom since you began this work?
This is a radically different world today than it was even 15 years ago for kids to grow up in. And I think we don't step back far enough to see that. And I'm always paying attention not only to the things that change, I'm paying attention to the things that don't change, no matter what else changes. So that by and large, people are still asking the same questions about how to go about this, teaching this topic to your children, that they were asking me 40 years ago. We don't move as a culture. We don't think in sophisticated ways. And we don't. I think it's because we're so uncomfortable. I think it's because we didn't have role models. We didn't go to schools that taught truly age-appropriate programming. But I really want everybody to step back and take a look at that. That why are we still doing same old, when the world has so drastically changed? If you think about it, how easy was it to childproof an environment? You know, years ago, yeah. Even 5 or 6 years ago, every year, the boundaries between the adult and the child world are erased just a little bit more. That's not good for our kids. We have a culture that's really hostile to affirming kids in terms of what they really need.
Deborah Rothman is the author of Talk to Me First, Everything You Need to Know to Become Your Kid's Go-To Person About Sex. She is a sex education expert here in Baltimore at Park School for 40 years now, as of this week. Congratulations on this book, and thank you so much for answering our questions and taking our calls today.
Take good care.
Listen, that's just about going to wrap things up for midday. I'm Aaron Hinken in for Dan Rodericks. Dan's going to be back with you tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow, tune in. Let's see. What's going on tomorrow's show? Can this be right? No, Midday Friday. Yes, Midday Friday, the weekly news roundup, and a special barbecue-themed hour of Midday Eats. That's this Friday on Midday. Dan's back with you tomorrow. Thanks again for listening to us. Be well.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Our interns are Aaron Morenzi, Aaliyah Satterfield, Kaylee Sadek, and Campbell Reed. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at wypr.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.